U.S. Center for Safe Sport not too long ago had to fire an investigator named Jason Crazley. Safe Sport hires investigators to investigate abuse allegations, abuse and harassment cases within the sporting world. Crazley was one of those investigators, but he needed to be fired after the discovery was made that he had been previously arrested. And he was previously arrested for stealing money that he confiscated from a drug bust during his previous job as a police officer. Yeah, go figure, right? He'd been hired by the Denver-based Safe Sports Center to investigate abuse and harassment cases after leaving the department in 2021. One of his cases involved a young man named Sean McDowell. When McDowell discovered the news reports about Crazley's behavior and his arrest for theft and receiving stolen property, to say that he was shocked would be an understatement. He said, "I'm still struggling to wrap my mind around it," said McDowell. "It just seems so far off from what their stated mission is." The firing and arrest of Crazley exposed vulnerabilities in the U.S. Center for Safe Sports hiring process and thereby undermining the trust in its mission to protect athletes from abuse. Despite claims of robust background checks, Crazley was hired even despite his past misconduct. Victims like Sean McDowell highlight the center's urgent need to restore their credibility and ensure its investigators meet high ethical standards. To key in on that statement that he says, it just seems so far off from what their stated mission is. Integrity and credibility go hand in hand. And when the integrity of a corporation or an individual comes into question, the trust or reliability of the corporation because of said individual or because of their failures of what they claimed they were going to do but did not do, that all comes into question, doesn't it? The same thing goes for the gospel. It's the point I'm going to be arguing today. The integrity of those who represent Jesus Christ has a direct effect on the credibility or believability of the gospel. People are always watching us to see what we do in order to decide whether what we say is true or believable or not. And when our integrity comes into question, the gospel's credibility comes into question. So therefore, you and I must maintain our integrity for the sake of the gospel's credibility. Paul is on trial in this chapter, but in reality, it is the gospel that is on trial. If the accusations against Paul, his integrity, his behavior, and his character are true, the negative ones, that is, if they are true, the gospel's credibility is going to be destroyed, and the Jews know it. The Jews are attacking Paul's credibility or Paul's integrity, trying to undermine what Paul is preaching. The Jews don't want the gospel to go forth. As a matter of fact, Satan doesn't want the gospel to go forth. So what Satan is going to do is he's going to look for things in you and me, or he's going to make things up about you and me to attack our integrity and thereby, therefore bringing down the credibility of the gospel. The two go hand in hand. There are three people that come into view in this passage today, three main characters. There's Paul, who is defending the gospel, defending his integrity. There is Tertullus. Tertullus is the Jewish lawyer, and Tertullus is going to represent the world. And then there is Felix. Felix is the man that we are all trying to win over. Tertullus is trying to win over Felix. Paul is trying to win over Felix. We see the different methods between the two. We see Felix in the center, and we see how important it is for us to maintain our integrity for the mission that you and I have been given. When we think about integrity, you look up the word integrity, it means the quality of being honest, having strong moral principles, and having a moral uprightness. It involves being true to ourselves even when it is difficult, or true to our principles even when they are difficult, and we are going to see that in the life of Paul here this morning. Essentially, integrity is about doing what is right when no one is looking, and we're going to see that in the life of Paul here. Integrity means unified. It means to be have a wholeness. There's a consistency in how we act and how we behave between what we say and what we believe. And believe me, folks, you and I are on trial every day. How's that make you feel? This was a pretty convicting message. I'm sorry. This is, I know we've talked about it in Acts, but this one really, I feel like I blew it. I honestly just feel like when I look at my life, and I know I can stand up here and preach the gospel, but the question comes in, am I really, really preaching it with my life? Am I adding to the credibility to the gospel and what I say, or am I taking away from it, from my behavior and my speech? We're going to see those two aspects that come into play here. Actually, there's three aspects total, but two specifically about Paul that we're going to look at. So the world is on the attack, questioning Paul's integrity and questioning the credibility of the gospel. So the first aspect that we see is the world lacks it. So it's one of the changes in your bulletin. I changed that this morning after preaching through this a couple times. And we're going to see that, we're going to see a big difference between Tertullus and Paul. In several states in India right now, instead of receiving justice, Christians who have been attacked are liable to be arrested on false charges. Regrettably, police frequently file counter-complaints despite the lack of evidence. This has been going on for a few years now. So if Christians are attacked by mobs, the mobs then file lawsuits against the Christians for fighting back. So how fair is that? And they're also accusing Christians of actually bribing individuals to believing the gospel. It is an attack on their integrity, but it is using false accusations to do it. The world has no scruples about doing this, neither does Tertullus and the Jews, and that's exactly what we see here. Read with me in verses 1 through 9 here in chapter 24. After 5 days, the high priest Ananias came down with some elders with an attorney named Tertullus, and he brought charges to the governor against Paul. After Paul had been summoned, Tertullus began to accuse him, saying to the governor, "Since we have through you attained much peace, and since by your providence reforms are being carried out for this nation, we acknowledge this in every way and everywhere, most excellent Felix, with all thankfulness. But that I may not weary you any further, I beg that you grant us, by your kindness, a brief hearing. For we have found this man to be a real pest, and a fellow who stirs up dissension among all the Jews throughout the world, and a ringleader of the sect of the Nazarenes. And he even tried to desecrate the temple, and then we arrested him. We wanted to judge him according to our own law, but Lysias, the commander, came along with much violence and took him out of our hands, ordering his accusers to come before you. By examining him yourself concerning all these matters, you will be able to ascertain the things of which we accuse him." And the Jews joined in the attack as well. Like I said, we're going to be comparing Tertullus with Paul. And again, Tertullus is trying to win Felix. Paul is trying to win Felix. But Paul is not trying to win Felix for Paul's sake. Paul is trying to win Felix for the gospel's sake. But Tertullus is trying to win Felix because if Tertullus wins, then the gospel is then decredited. It is unreliable. So his attack on Paul is an attack on the gospel because the Jews don't want the gospel going forth. And we see this in his character, this lack of integrity. Tertullus has a lack of integrity. As a matter of fact, Felix has a lack of integrity, which is why the world needs to see people with integrity, which is why when you and I preach the gospel, we need to do so with integrity as well and not follow the pattern here of Tertullus. So what is Tertullus's first tool in his bag? It's flattery, isn't it? I mean, get the corn on the cob out because here comes the butter. And even though this is part of his rhetorical argument, listen to how he opens up his argument and how he tries to win Felix over. He butters him up. Your Excellency, through your wise leadership, we've had lasting peace and reforms that benefit the people. And later on, he's going to say, by your kindness, sir, we would love for you to just weigh, give me your wonderful opinion on this argument that we are, that on this trial that we are bringing before you. There was a young man, he went to a wedding and he was introduced to a young girl for the first time. And he said to her, he said, you know, I don't know how old you are, but you sure don't look it. Flattery is a way to manipulate and deceive people to an end, isn't it? And that's exactly what Tertullus is doing. And that is exactly what you and I are not supposed to do. Wait till you see the contrast between the way Tertullus talks to Felix and the way Paul talks to Felix. You and I are not to butter people up so that we can bring them over to the side of Christianity. That's exactly what he's doing here. He's buttering him up. He's saying, hey, man, Felix, you're the best. You're awesome. And maybe you're saying, well, Pastor Mark, why are you saying this? What if Felix was really this way? How many people believe Felix was this way? Raise your hands. Well, if you know anything about the history of Felix, this guy lacks integrity too. So Felix is a real, real troublesome person. Tacitus records this of Felix. He says, in the practice of all kinds of lust, crime, and cruelty, he exercised the power of a king with the temper of a slave, it should say, not the mind of a slave, but with the temper of a slave. Felix did not bring lasting peace. As a matter of fact, he was very, very cruel in the way he dealt with the bandits. Though he got rid of certain bandits, the way in which he got rid of them was very, very cruel. As a matter of fact, Felix was also guilty of killing one of the high priests, Jonathan. He used manipulation. He achieved his position of power through nepotism because his brother had high influence in the Roman courts as well. So he had risen to the power, and then he, as Tacitus says, ruled with the power of a king, but the mind of a slave. Both of these guys lack integrity, and the world needs to see integrity in those who represent the gospel. But Tertullus is using lies in order to get Felix over to his side. The second way he is lying, not just in the flattery, but in his arguments, there is only one charge that is somewhat true that Paul is going to admit to in this argument. But notice what Tertullus does is he attacks the character of Paul, which it's an ad hominem argument. It means that it means nothing to the case at hand. He's calling Paul a plague and trying to win Felix over to his side. And that's not what you and I are to do. That's not how you and I are to act in this world. He's using fear, by saying he causes these riots. He's lying about that. Paul didn't cause the riot. As a matter of fact, the Pax Romana was so important in Rome, the peace of Rome, that he knew that by saying this, he would get Felix over to his side, because even though Felix doesn't care too much about the religion aspect of it, Felix cares about the peace. The world is going to attack our integrity, and the world lacks integrity. We're not to make up lies. We're not to use flattery. We're not to butter people up so that the tough pill of the gospel will go down better. There's a point to being winsome, but not at the expense of the truth. Having integrity means being honest, means being truthful. I think we see this a lot with the seeker-sensitive movement in Christianity, where we say wonderful things about how great people are, build them up, and then slip in the gospel, hoping they take the bait and switch. You and I are to be honest and truthful about our aims and our motives. Second aspect that we see regarding our integrity is we should be able to defend it, verses 10 through 21. When the governor had nodded for him to speak, Paul responded, and listen to the difference of how Paul speaks to him. He's just all about the facts. Knowing that for many years you have been a judge to this nation. There you go, fact. I cheerfully make my defense. Since you can take note of the fact, no more than 12 days ago, I went up to Jerusalem to worship. Neither in the temple, nor in the synagogue, nor in the city itself did they find me carrying on a discussion with anyone or causing a riot. Nor can they prove to you the charges of which they now accuse me of. But this I admit to you, that according to the way which they call the sect, I do serve the God of our fathers, believing everything that is in accordance with the law and that is written in the prophets, having a hope in God which these men cherish themselves, that there shall certainly be a resurrection of both the righteous and the wicked. In view of all this, I also do my best to maintain a blameless conscience before both God and before men. Now, after several years, I bring alms to my nation and to present offerings in which they found me occupied in the temple, having been purified without any crowd or uproar. But there were some Jews from Asia who ought to have been present before you and to make these accusations if they should have anything against me. Or else, let these men themselves tell you what misdeed they found when I stood before the council, other than for this one statement which I shouted while standing among them, for the resurrection of the dead, I am on trial before you today. Police officer Chris Ford tries to be courteous in all of his interactions that he has with citizens during his shifts on traffic patrol. All of Ford's interactions are captured by mandatory body cams on his person. However, there is also an additional measure that helps him, that motivates him to be more pleasant, professional, even when members of the public are standoffish, irritated, or just flat out rude. He's required during the interactions or after the interactions to hand out a business card. It looks like this. And then on the back is that QR code. And it encourages the citizens to rate their interactions with said police officer. Using a star-based system called the Guardian Score, officers are rated on a criteria such as communication, listening skills, and fairness. According to the founder, Chuck Wexler, of the Police Executive Research Forum, he says programs like the Guardian Score are a great way to measure the quality of officer engagement. At a time when Many people are questioning the police accountability and, I would add, credibility in how police deal with citizens. Departments are looking for a way to measure how they are doing, and this is one of them. What do you think about that for a second? Can you imagine having a little card? And after your interactions, you're shaking, someone's shaking their head already. Nope. Have a little card. Hey, I want you to rate how I did as a Christian and what you think about the gospel after your interaction with me. How many people would love to hand out a little card like that after an interaction? Wouldn't that be interesting? This one really got me. I'm thinking, can you imagine? And another thought for us here is, if you and I are brought to trial like Paul is brought to trial, would those things, the negative things that are said about Paul, would you and I be guilty of? Would you and I be able to defend our integrity like Paul's able to defend his here? And would you and I be guilty of the one thing that Paul is guilty of? Like I said, the world is looking for things that are wrong with Christians and with Christianity. I think this is why the verse in the Bible is there that says to avoid even the appearance of evil. Why is that? Well, because if you and I partake in such things, the credibility of the gospel is going to go down, isn't it? Paul is able to defend himself. Paul is able to say no to two charges or three charges and yes to one charge. And Christians need to be able to do the same. And I think specifically the charges or the exaggerations that are brought against Paul, being a plague, being a pest, stirring up dissension, causing problems, being disrespectful to another religion. Those things should never be said about Christians, amen? Because when they're true about Christians, it reflects poorly on the gospel, and Paul knows that. And Paul's goal, as he is going to tell us, is to maintain a blameless conscience before both God and man, to have integrity before both. Those are the things that you and I should not be guilty of. And unfortunately, it seems like in our present day, those are some things that Christians are guilty of. Stirring up problems, being a nuisance, being pests, disrespecting other people and their faith, and doing it in a way that puts the gospel in a very, very poor light. It doesn't mean that we don't say anything about other religions. Of course, we talk about them and we argue about them, but how we do it is extremely important. And what the world sees in us and our witness is extremely important. If we're known as fighters, if we're known as attackers, if we're known as gossipers, if we're known as rioters, what does that say about Jesus Christ? We have to be able to defend it. Now, it doesn't mean we're going to be perfect. Not at all. But we need to be aware that our character and how we behave in this society has a direct impact on the gospel of Jesus Christ. And like I said, I'm preaching to myself. What people see in us is what they're going to think about what we believe. There's one accusation, one thing we should be guilty of. It's the same thing that Paul's guilty of. What is it? It's following the way. Tertullus called it a sect. He names the sect as the way. And this is the one he says, guilty as charged. The bad accusations we should not be guilty of. This one we should always be guilty of. When you look at this, here's the things that we should be guilty of. You and I should be known for serving God faithfully. People should be able to look at our lives and say, that person prioritizes God and Jesus Christ. People should be able to look at us and see that we don't serve ourselves, that we don't serve this world in a negative sense, but that we serve God, and in serving God, we serve others, and we do so with kindness, gentleness, and respect. We should be guilty of believing in and applying Scripture. Paul says he believes everything the law and the prophets. I'm guilty of that. That's what he says. You and I should be guilty of upholding this truth. People should know us as people who follow the Bible, people who apply the truth to our lives, people who are not ashamed to preach the truth. You and I should be guilty of hope, a hope in God and a hope in the resurrection. And I think if we're guilty of hope, we're guilty of joy. When people look at your lives, do they see you hope in this world? Do they see you hope in mankind? Do they see you hope in yourself? Do they see you hope in your treasures or in money or whatever it is? Or do they see that you hope in God? When people look at you, do they know that you're a person who is looking beyond this world and into the next? Do they see you, and if we have a hope in the resurrection, then we know that our bodies are going to live on for all eternity, so therefore we should be willing to sacrifice ourselves for that hope. And that's exactly what Paul is willing to do. Paul has integrity right now. Why? Because he is honest and he is telling Felix the truth about who he is, and he's not ashamed to stand up for the faith that he believes in. And to be blameless should be our goal. Like I said, not to be perfect, but to ensure that our lives before God and others are being accountable to them, that we are trying our best not to be sinful with regards to both God and man. Our lives need to reflect our beliefs. We should be able to defend our integrity. If we're living in sin, if people know us as troublemakers or disrespectful, if we claim to believe the Bible but don't follow the teachings of it, all of these things have a negative effect on the gospel. Like I said, not that we strive to be perfect, but we do strive to be blameless. Third and final aspect is our witness depends on our integrity. Verses 22 through 27. But Felix, having a more exact knowledge about the way, put them off, saying, "When Lysias the commander comes down, I will decide your case." Then he gave orders to the centurion for him to be kept in custody and yet have some freedom, not to prevent any of his friends from ministering to him. But some days later, Felix arrived with Drusilla, his wife, who was a Jewess, and sent for Paul and heard him speak about faith in Christ Jesus. But as he was discussing righteousness, self-control, and judgment to come, Felix became frightened and said, "Go away for the present, And when I find time, I will summon you. At the same time, too, he was hoping that money would be given him by Paul. Therefore, he also used to send for him quite often and converse with him. But after 2 years had passed, Felix was succeeded by Porcius Festus, and wishing to do the Jews a favor, Felix left Paul imprisoned. During his training to become a hospital chaplain, a man was surprised to learn of a phenomenon in the medical community widely known as mutual pretense. In many cases, mutual pretense is something that takes place after a period of treatment for a particular patient has run its course, and it becomes clear to everyone that it's not working, and the patient will inevitably die. Despite the fact that this dark reality is known to all parties involved, the doctor, the patient, and the family of the patient will often deal with the fact about talking about anything other than that person is going to die. They'll talk about what will happen, actually, once they get out of the hospital, what they're going to do when everything gets better. They talk about sports. They talk about the family. They talk about anything but the truth of impending death. Mutual pretense is kind of a survival mechanism that allows everyone to continue talking to each other while not having to actually talk about what's really going on, like the brute reality of impending death. Not that we could practice mutual pretense, because it takes two parties to practice mutual pretense, but we are not to practice any type of pretense. And Paul practices no pretense whatsoever, especially when it comes to the condition of two individuals, which is Felix and now Felix's wife, Drusilla. So Drusilla is now enters into the picture, which is really interesting because we know about Felix and we know about Felix's corruption and Felix's life. And actually, we learn a little bit more about Felix when we are introduced into his wife, Drusilla. So Drusilla was originally married to King Azizus. He was the king of Emesa. But when Felix saw her, he was enraptured by her beauty, and he wanted to do anything possible to make her his wife. The story has it that he hired or contracted a magician or a sorcerer. Guess what the sorcerer's name was? Simon. So whether it's the same Simon or not, who knows, but kind of interesting. And Simon did something, but Felix did something too and persuaded Drusilla to leave her husband and to marry Felix, which was against and contrary. She was a Jew. So that's contrary to her laws and customs, and it highlights the moral and ethical complexities of her life. The two of them together were living a very immoral, deceitful, and ungodly life. And what does Paul talk to them about? Not the weather. Paul doesn't practice any pretense whatsoever. How different. Now go back up to Tertullus, right? Tertullus butters them up. Oh, you know, he butters Felix up. Oh, you're so wonderful. You're so great. You're so awesome. We're so blessed to have a person like you. Paul says absolutely nothing of the sort, does he? Integrity needs to be both in what we speak and in how we live. And that's exactly what we see Paul do here today. If you and I want to have an effective witness, both of these need to be present. Paul speaks to them with truthfulness, with honesty about their impending death. Now, here's the topics that Paul talks to them about. And it's kind of a scale of topics, I think. How many, we don't have a hard time talking about faith in Jesus, right? People like Jesus. Jesus is respected in this world. You know, we can do that sometimes without having to really, really confront people on their sin issues. I mean, we need to, but sometimes we can kind of slip in the gospel in different ways. So we don't have a hard time talking about faith in Jesus. But that's what he talks to them about faith in Jesus. And I think these are the topics that he discusses regarding faith in Jesus. Righteousness, that's the next one, right? How many times you get someone together and be like, all right, hey, we're going to have a conversation. What do you want to talk about? Hey, we're going to talk about righteousness. Oh, okay, let's talk about righteousness. These are two unbelievers that he's talking to them about. What do you think he's saying about righteousness? Well, he's probably talking about our unrighteousness. He's probably talking about their unrighteousness. And he's probably talking about the righteousness of God and how God demands righteousness in us, but it's impossible, isn't it? And he's probably talking about the only way to have that righteousness is in the righteousness of Jesus Christ. I mean, maybe we would even talk about righteousness a little bit. How about that one, self-control? Hey, look, come on over for lunch. What do you want to talk about? We're going to get together, and me and you, we're going to talk about self-control and your lack thereof it. Do these two guys have self-control? Absolutely not. Doesn't seem it, right? Seems like they're just living according to the lusts of the world. But Paul brings it up as just a topic of conversation. Hey, let's talk about self-control, and then let's talk about what happens if you don't have faith in Jesus. How about eternal judgment? All of these topics, Paul is not afraid to talk about with the individual that has control over his life right now, so to speak. Is Paul trying to flatter them? Not in any stretch of the imagination. You see, Paul doesn't care about his own skin. He's not interested in saving himself. Paul is interested in saving them. He preaches with truth, and he lives with truth. He lives the truth. We look at side by side, and we look at integrity. It is speaking the truth of the gospel, and then in our lives, living out that truth. And that's exactly what Paul does here. When we look at the life of Felix particularly, we see three things to where the world sells their integrity or loses their integrity. We see it in power, we see it in sex, and we see it in money. Those three areas describe the life of Felix. That man has no integrity. And now he gets to see Paul. He's familiar with the way, and now he gets to see the way lived out in the life of Paul. He offers a bribe. Bribes were common, and especially in the Roman legal system. And earlier on, we talked about the commander who purchased his citizenship. Well, he purchased it. And so what Felix wants to do is he's going to test Paul here. Well, he doesn't know he's testing Paul, but Paul's being tested. And he keeps bringing him back, hoping that Paul's going to give him a bribe. Now, I want you to think about that for a second. Can you imagine everything that Paul just preached about? Righteousness, self-control, judgment, faith in Jesus Christ. What happens to what he just said if he takes Felix up on this offer and gives him money to set himself free? All of that talk is going to seem really, really cheap, isn't it? And the credibility of the gospel would be destroyed. for 2 years. 2 years. Paul could have, no one would have known, right? Paul could have easily slipped him a denarii or two. Here, this is between me and you. But Paul is not interested in saving himself. Paul is interested in the credibility of the gospel and getting Felix to believe it by not just hearing it, but by seeing it played out in his life. Can only imagine what would have happened. He would have thought Paul's talk was cheap, and he would have thought that Jesus Christ was just another lowercase God among the pantheon that he's familiar with. The city of Cairo has its own unique version of poverty called Garbage City. Each morning at dawn, some 7,000 garbage collectors on one-horse carts leave for the city of Cairo, where they collect garbage left behind by the city's 7 million citizens. After a day's work, they return to Garbage City, bringing the trash back to their homes and sorting out what is useful. In Muslim countries, there are certain restrictions on sifting through refuse. So the inhabitants of Garbage City are usually non-religious or they are Christians. These are the poorest of the poor and outcasts among outcasts. There's a report that in 1972, there was a young Egyptian businessman, and he lost his wristwatch. Now, if you're familiar with Egyptian businessmen, they have very expensive wristwatches. This one was valued roughly around $11,000. It was picked up by someone from Garbage City. They found the wristwatch, and they saw the owner's name on the watch. I just wanted you to think about that for a second. I look for $11,000 wristwatches all the time. I hope I never find one with a name on it. Just kidding. You imagine the poorest, that's where they live. That picture there, that's a wide view of, that's what their area looks like. It's just filth and refuse. Trash. Poorest of the poor. Can you imagine the businessman's surprise after knowing he lost his wristwatch to have a knock on his door? And to have a poor garbage collector from Garbage City hand it back to him. And as he handed it back to him, this is what he said. My Christ told me to be honest until death. It gets better. The businessman later on told the reporter this. I didn't know Christ at the time, but I told the garbage man that I saw Christ in him. And then I said to him, because of what you have done, because of your great example, I will worship the Christ you are worshiping. And he did. And him and his wife actually began a ministry to the impoverished in their area. Our integrity is key to the gospel's credibility. Father, Lord, I know many confess the times, Lord, when not lived in such a fashion to bring honor and glory to your name and to your truth of the gospel. Help us all to reflect, Lord, in our own lives to confess those sins before you. And Lord, help us to follow the example of the Apostle Paul. Lord, that we'd be able to live such a life, be able to defend our integrity when attacked, and be able to bring glory to you, and by doing so, Lord, to bring many, many people into your kingdom, that they can see lives that have been transformed by the truth of the gospel, lives transformed by the truth that we preach to them. We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.